All right. Good morning, everybody. Today is Friday. Yay, it's Friday, October 14th, 2016. And this is Before the First Cup of Jewels here on UCY.TV. Happy Friday, everyone. It is a nippy 41 degrees and partly sunny here in upstate New York. Last night before I went to bed, it was like 37. It was supposed to get nice this weekend. So where do we leave off yesterday? We titled the show Space for Commercialization, National Security, and Warfare. And I hate to tell you that it was kind of a lame title, but by the time that show was over yesterday, I think there was 9 straight shows on space. How about space titled out? So this will be the last one, I promise. We talked about a lot of things, though. We looked at Elon Musk and Boeing and Jeff Bezos and Stephen Hawking and Zuckerberg and China with their space station. We also had the UK and Russia working in partnership to land on Mars with a rover next Wednesday at 10:48 Eastern in the morning. We had Congress dedicate $19.5 billion, and Obama come out and announce that this is our destiny. This is our future. We are going to Mars. We got National Geographic now rolling out in November. It's a brand new TV series, global event, Mars, the next chapter in human history. They're pushing this really big time. We find out, though, that there is a space treaty back from 1967. And there are only 3 signors on that space treaty. One happens to be the United States. One is the UK. And the third is Russia. We have India, and India has their probe on the moon. We have China. I don't know if it's still up there, but I think it is. China had sent a probe to the moon. India to the Mars, and China to the moon. So it's starting to get crowded in space, and we found out in reading about some of the space command stuff that space is one of those pivotal pieces to national security that we, according to the government, must always maintain superiority in. And the game is getting heating up out there. So the problem that we have, at least that I see, is we've got all these billionaires involved. We've got all these tech web billionaires. They've created little space companies now. And according to the space treaty, the United States government is responsible for any and all activity off-world for any company or entity, such as an astronaut sent from our country, which includes corporations. So it has caused this happy colluding that has happened. You know, we're going to go lease your spaceport, NASA, and we'll give you some money so you guys don't bleed without a space program. And guess what? Hey, we'll use your astronauts, too, and we can share information. But NASA's still kind of in control. NASA and the FAA, federal, the Department of State, of course, very privately, the Department of Defense, because we're not supposed to have any type of defenses up there. But they're all in control of commercial entities, including a Mars manned mission and a colony, would all be very tightly controlled and licensed per the space treaty by the government where you initially came from, in this case, the United States. So, you know, we started talking about things such as how to get up there and how to live on other heavenly bodies, since apparently that is the future that they are charting for us for 2030, the human race. They got seed vaults everywhere just in case, so don't worry about it. Everything will be A-okay. But we got DARPA and their programmable matter projects. Now, remember, we looked at those a few days ago. It's pretty strange stuff. They want to be able to do molecular manufacturing. That was in that DARPA podcast. I saw the second podcast came out the other day, so I got to hear that still. But I bet it'll be good. But they have their programmable matter. They have their desktop manufacturing. They're able to create custom molecules from raw materials. Good old Eric Drexler talked about that way, way back. That was, you know, what they had been hoping for. That is the George Jetson 21st century Star Trek replicator. We're going to need something like that on another planet that doesn't have factories. We also had DARPA talking about building houses out of biological material and things as we're pushing buttons, mixing and matching, terraforming Mars first. And then don't worry, then we'll be able to create building structures out of the very raw materials that make up the building blocks of life. But hey, you know, that's the way it all is. We're going to be able to do wonderful things on this planet as well. Before we get to that, I'm going to put the very end on space here. So how do we get to space? Well, we looked at a few things. You know, we have the Origin ship. We have the Falcon rockets. We got a couple different ways. We heard maybe there's a way now they're looking with this new moon mission for mining. I think it was that mining mission that they were talking about doing it, where they were going to start testing. It was one of the missions going to the moon in the future here. They were going to start testing using water as fuel and breaking it into its component parts. We also found out, looking at Hawking and Zuckerberg and that Russian billionaire's project to Alpha Centauri, they were looking at using space-based lasers to be able to fire it at a cone that was on. And I don't know how they're going to do that, because they were literally talking about using those little 10 by 10 by 10 centimeter CubeSats. So that's going to be a real long distance to be hitting a little teeny, teeny target. The speck, the size of a speck of dust with a laser a million miles away. I don't know if that's going to happen. But, you know, they got a good idea anyway. Might as well. And those little things, I bet you even baking soda and vinegar would work. Psh, start a little reaction in the cone. But how are we going to travel? You know, they're going to send people out there. We got CERN. Remember, CERN is working on some sort of artificial magnetosphere drawn out of the experiments that they've been doing at the Large Hadron Collider. Who would have thought CERN? I ran into CERN a few times over the last few days and some weird stuff. But last but not least, so we have a way to produce things without having a factory. We have a way to get there. We have a spaceship. We even potentially could have a radiation shield. All right, well, how are they going to get to the other side of the galaxy? Well, putting humans in stasis is the best way of getting us to Mars. This is a story that came out of the IEEE Spectrum, which is surprising. September 15th, 2016. This was about a month ago. Humans are not designed for long-distance travel, which makes the roughly 55 million-kilometer trip to Mars a real hassle. It is hard enough keeping a few of us fleshy weaklings alive next door in low Earth orbit. And, you know, we even read that there are definitely some potential side effects. Elon Musk said, if you're going to Mars, you better be willing to die. And we saw a story a few days back. Potentially the radiation, just some of those gamma rays and cosmic radiation, causes you to get dementia, and it could be permanent. I've read some stories, and like I mentioned the other day, they're not saying this anymore. Now they're saying it could be a two-way trip versus a one-way trip. But originally it was a one-way trip because the gravity on Mars would make permanent changes to your body that your body would not be able to unchange, like squishing things. So I don't know where they're thinking this is going to be round trippable, unless you're always in some sort of some sort of artificial gravity that doesn't squish you like a bug, squish you down and compact you for you to think that you're going to come back. But I don't think it's going to be a good, at least for the first people, I don't think that this is going to be a vacation. $200,000, step right up if you got what it takes. If you got balls of steel and you're not afraid to die and you love that adrenaline rush, come be a Mars cowboy. I mean, they really, really, really think that people, and there are. I mean, if you just take a look, that new TV show Mars that starts in November 14th, I think, a National Geographic has a whole website that's dedicated to following the mission, and you can even fill out an application to see if you have what it takes to join the future mission to Mars. And when they announced that reality TV program, I think there were 100 slots initially, and I mean, they had thousands, tens of thousands, maybe even hundreds of thousands of people who applied. And people have been waiting for the aliens to come take us for a long time. This is like the first chance they have to get off this rock. But the only reason why we're in this boat is because they screwed it up so bad. Because all these big, same, not same, but some of these same big families and governments and corporations that have been polluting for generations and ruining things on this planet are all part of that military-industrial complex. That same military-industrial complex that is now in the evil underground of this new collaboration to get us off this rock. And they're pulling all these unsuspectings. I don't know if they're unsuspecting, actually. I'll take that back. Like I said, I like Musk, but I don't know if I could trust him, so I'm not going to think he's all innocent or anything. And definitely Jeff Bezos isn't. I mean, CEO of Amazon, who built the parallel cloud for the CIA project, who also bought the Washington Post. Yeah, no, no, no. He knows what's going on. Anyway, so how are we going to make that long distance travel? Well, let's think about our trip to Mars. It's at best several months away. And once you head out, there is no stopping for groceries. The job of the astronaut during the journey will be simple. Eat, drink, and breathe for the bare minimum necessary for survival, while trying not to die of boredom or kill any of your fellow travelers. Well, good plan. But after the first few months, it is going to get decidedly unpleasant. Aerospace company SpaceWorks, with more funding from NASA's Innovative Concepts Program. You know, I gotta tell you, NASA is funding a lot of this that's going on right now. So, guys, we have all these commercial interests that are getting ready to go up there and start reaping the benefits of some of the riches of these other heavenly bodies for profit. Yeah, we are using taxpayer dollars to fund a lot of these programs. Not like, oh, it's going to save us money because we got these other companies partnering with us so we get an off cheap. But, guys, they're selling the future. Just like when you have a piece of land. Let's say it's been your family's land. You know, your people came over here in the Mayflower. Or maybe you're some of the indigenous people that lived here. Your family farmed this land for generations. One day you get a tax bill. And you don't pay the tax bill. And Uncle Sam comes and they auction off your land. They sell it to somebody else, but you're like, wait, my family's had this land long before your ancestors ever got here. They're like, we don't care. It's our land. We claimed it. You don't own that land. You just pay taxes on it. You rent it while you're here. And that's pretty much the way it is. And it's not just going to be here. Now it's going to be outer space. We're not going to own anything out there. We're not going to get any real benefits financially from any of the riches that are found there, even though it is funded with lots of taxpayer money. And I said $19.5 billion. There's a lot more. Not that I'm, you know, pishon going to Mars. or the moon. But you know what? Companies such as SpaceX or Blue Origin or Virgin or any of these other space companies that we're seeing springing up all over, there's a whole new industry coming. Hey, you want to be in the game, Charlie? Well, I sure hope you have enough money then. I don't understand why we are funding commercial enterprise to space. I mean, a lot of this money that has been assigned is to help men get to Mars. They're going to be profiting from it. We found out when we read that space treaty, the new space treaty, though. What is the new one? It's up in front of Congress. The American Space Renaissance Act. Brand new. This will be the new space treaty for the 21st century. One of the things, after we read that, one of the things that came up when we were looking at, is Elon Musk's crazy plan even legal to send people to Mars? They had interviewed an attorney, and the attorney brought up a lot of really good questions, and she was a space attorney. I didn't even know he had one of those, but I guess there's some agency, and she's the attorney there. And one of the big questions was, if you went up there, were you going to be a private citizen, or were you going to be an employee of the mining company, or were you going to be considered an astronaut and an emissary or an envoy for all the human race? And I think it's all of the above. According to some of those original treaties that we saw, and what was interesting is that a listener yesterday dropped me the Antarctic Treaty for doing research down in Antarctica. And it's interesting because we mentioned that yesterday when I was reading the space treaty. I was like, huh, this sounds very similar to the one we have for Antarctica, where we all agree that we have to do research, we can't have nuclear weapons, we can't destroy it, we all got to work together and be nice. And the country that sends you down there is responsible for you. But how interesting, even more so, that Antarctica, we find out, was actually testing whether or not people would go insane in isolation in preparation for the future of the moon. So, pretty cool. Pretty, pretty cool. So, this is the new wild frontier. All right, so how are we going to get there? Well, you have to make sure you don't kill your fellow travelers. Don't get bored. And after a few months, it's going to be decidedly unpleasant. But aerospace company SpaceWorks, with funding from a NASA's Innovative Advanced Concepts program, is exploring the idea of having voyagers to Mars do what all professional travelers do when confronted by long transit times. Use whatever technologies or what pharmaceuticals, ding, medicine's gone mad, look out, that are available in order to make themselves totally unaware of as much of the experience as possible. So what are they saying? Get as high as hell? Because that's what it almost sounds like. A trip to Mars is going to be more than a couple of Ambien, though. That is why SpaceWorks is working on space habitats that will keep humans comfortably in stasis for the entire trip. Now, this is where we're going to start talking about the suspended animation. I had covered suspended animation way, way, way back, and I kind of mentioned it briefly yesterday. Gabby Giffords got shot. Gabby Giffords miraculously managed to come out of that whole thing with her faculties. And I mean, there's questions as to whether or not that whole thing was a false flag. And I don't even remember his name. I just saw a picture of him the other day. Whatever his name was, the wacky dude. The dude that once he got arrested and in jail looked different, too, than the dude that they had originally showed. I don't know. And he was all kinds of crazy. But Gabby Giffords, they dropped her into some ice water and stopped her from getting brain damage because they slowed down her metabolism and the brain flow and the oxygen requirements of her brain. They've used it on a Buffalo Bill as well, and he got a major neck injury quite a number of years later. And they were able to prevent any type of brain damage and spinal damage to him as well by putting him in, cooling him down, putting him into an induced coma, and dropping his core body temperature. But I had done some research back in that time, and I think back originally was 2011. We found out just recently Gabby Gifford's husband came back from one of, I think he was actually the longest person on the space shuttle now, or space station. It was just recently, maybe a few months ago, he came back. But he works for NASA. Well, NASA and DARPA had announced programs way back, taking a look at suspended animations. Very interesting that Gabby Giffords, one of our public, she was a congresswoman or something, wasn't she? I don't know. It was so long ago. But anyway, that's when I first started looking at suspended animation. And now we're really at that point. There's been a video and a couple stories. Now they're talking about mad science in the hospitals. But I'm telling you, it works. One of the Buffalo Bills was very injured here. And he made a full recovery, if I'm not mistaken, using this same sort of technique. So anyway, it's like falling into ice water in the wintertime, going through the ice, and the water's really cold. And people can survive for a long time underwater without having instant brain death because the oxygen requirements for the brain get greatly reduced when your core body temperature drops and your metabolism isn't working at full speed. It's like almost like a hibernation. So SpaceWorks is working on space habitats that'll keep humans comfortably in stasis for the entire trip. And when it says stasis, SpaceWorks is working on putting astronauts in a, quote, inactive, low metabolic, torpor, as in bumping into walls, torpor state for mission transit phases. I do like that. So that must be the elevator pitch. Inactive, low metabolic, torpor state. Torpor state for mission transit phases. So it's not the kind of sci-fi stasis where people are going to lie completely frozen in inert, also known as Han Soloization. Yes, that one is carbonite. But rather something more akin to hibernation where the body systems just go slow and way, way, way down to low gear. Fortunately, we know that it is possible to do this because for many animals, it is a seasonally recurring phenomenon that is no big deal. And what SpaceWorks is trying to figure out is how humans can snooze away for months at a time like bears do. Well, just move to upstate New York in January and I'll explain it to you. Actually, nature will help you out. There are many reasons. It gets dark here in right before the solstice or whatever it is, the when we change to winter in December, guys. It's real early, and I didn't have a lot of sleep, and I only probably had like 6 cups of coffee. So we're winging it today, but I'm all right. It's Friday in December here, right before December 21st. My friend lives down in the south central area of the country. Did not believe me that in December, we literally get dark here, 4:30 p.m. And I mean, yes, dark, pitch black, dark, 4:30 p.m. And he's like, no, that's not possible. Well, yes, it is. We discovered that not only do we have time issues going from East Central Mountain Pacific, where we have the difference as to where the sun is, but you also have latitudinal changes. And up here in New York, if you can even believe it, we are like halfway to the Arctic Circle. I didn't believe it, but the measurements are there. We are halfway to the Arctic Circle here. So just like in the Arctic or in Antarctica, when you get 30 days of light, 24/7, and actually I think it's more than that. I think it's like this whole season, winter over in Antarctica, was like a whole winter with no sunlight. We get that same effect here. It just gets dark. We don't get 24 hours sun, but it does get light real early here. I mean, even in the summertime, I have sunrise. I mean, like at 3:45 a.m. in the summer, like right at the height of the summer, You literally, the birds start tweeting already in the trees, and by 4 o'clock on the horizon, you start to see that glow at 4 a.m., and that's another thing, my friend down there is like, no way, I still got 3 more or 4 more hours of darkness. Well, not up here you don't, not at the height of summer. And that's the thing, like, when I go to visit the woods, it's unbelievable because I am up at sunrise, and it feels like it's literally noon. The sun is so strong right around the summer solstice up here. So anyway, just food for thought. It's not all the same everywhere. It's pretty weird. I mean, I've spent most of my life up here, so I don't really notice it. But when you have friends that are in other locales and you start comparing, you know, weather and looking at your sunrise and sunset times, you're like, wow, there's a big difference. There's literally like an hour difference in summer. I think we actually get an hour more sunlight up here because our sunrise is so early than you do down south. And it's not the time changes. It's the latitude. So the reason why I was talking about that is because they mentioned something in here about hibernation. At 4:30, December 20th, let's say, it's after December 21st, it starts to go back the other direction. But at 4:30 in the evening, it is pitch dark here, like it is nighttime, and it is frigid and cold, and your body goes into a hibernation mode. I'm going to attest for that. I've lived up here for a lot of years. I've been through a lot of winters, and already starting this time, as all of our leaves are starting to change now, and you can already see your eyes start to notice that the lighting, I'm sure that's everywhere, but further south you go, the less you're going to see that slant of the sun as you start going into the winter season. But here, you literally can see that the sun drops in the sky. So even at its highest point, it still is at a really low angle. You got all these shadows. It always used to make me feel real lonely when I was a kid. It's weird. It's a very weird feeling it always gives me. But it actually happens. And your body, regardless of whether or not you want it to or not, your body senses that. And you start getting cold. You should see me now. I wear my socks and woolies, and I got my sweatshirt on and long sleeves. It's hysterical because my body just goes into this. It knows it's time to start getting ready. And I start, you know, like a salad isn't enough to fulfill you anymore. You need to have some meat and potatoes. You need to have, you know, some nice stick to the ribs because your body is going into hibernation mode up here. So for those of you who are still feeling 90 degrees, I'm sure that you couldn't even understand. But for those of you up here in the northern latitudes, and I would think that that would probably apply straight across the board from west to east, and especially up in Canada, I hear the guys at Anchor America, if you're out there, hey guys, they're up in their igloo, and they're even more north than we are. And I mean, that sounds insane. They get such brutal, brutal temperatures, and it's got to be dark up there probably even before 4:30. All right, anyway, I ramble. It's Friday. All right, there are many reasons why putting people into torpor for long duration space flights is a good idea. And one of the biggest is psychological. Spending months in a cramped spacecraft with the same people and doing nothing new will be a challenge. You know, my father said in Antarctica when he was down there for that year, there were actually if we get him back on one of these days, that's what I want to talk about, like all the different times that this one or that one almost killed somebody. He said people used to twang out quite often down there. They had lots of food, lots of steaks, lots of booze, you know, to keep them all happy. Not really much of anything else to do down there. It's not like you had TV or radio even. Played cards and researched tropical fish that they found millions of years old under the ice. Hey, played around with fuels, you know, and nuclear reactors, but really not much else to do. And people would have to go see the psychiatrist quite often. So, yeah, they're absolutely right in thinking that maybe having people awake for a few months on end in a cramped little spacecraft that don't know each other too well would not be such a good idea because you probably would see bloodshed. So spending months in a cramped spacecraft with the same people and nothing to do or see will be a challenge for even the most disciplined astronaut. And just the thought of the return trip, which, again, I don't know. I question that unless they keep them under some sort of Earth-normalized gravity the whole time. It could be super depressing if anything goes wrong. But the primary reason for torpor is mass. A conscious, active human demands an enormous amount of air, water, and food. Useless eaters. And as byproducts of that activity, the body yields liquid and solid waste, poisonous gases, and excess heat. Oh, yes, we are the cause of global warming. It's another line in this up. All of which needs to be handled within the closed system of an interplanetary spacecraft. And we do have the technology to do this, right? Did you see on the space station as of a few years ago? They discovered that they can recycle urine and make it into the team's drinking water. So they're all up there sharing each other's pee. It's all filtered and everything. But still, how disgusting is that? I think I would rather like it to percolate through some cleaning filters and, I don't know, go run through some rocks and sand before it makes it back to my drinking water. Probably doesn't really happen. If we look at our system here, everything is poison. We're going to look at that later here. But the body yields lots of waste and gases and heat and whatever. And we have the technology to take care of all this poisonous material. But then that involves hauling tons and tons of extra stuff around. And when it comes to space travel, extra stuff is usually what you are trying hardest to avoid because it means more stuff. More mass means more engines means more fuel, and all together it means a staggering increase to cost. Right, they want to send us up there on the cheap. So let's put staggering in context. To deliver a crew of six to Mars, NASA estimates that you need a habitation module with 360 cubic meters of useful volume weighing 28,000 kilograms. For those of us who don't know the metric system, I don't really know what that equals, but it sounds like a lot. And on top of that, you'll need 13,000 kilograms of food, but don't worry about that. We got all this synthetic biology, CRISPR in the TARDIS going on in the Petri dish. We're going to take care of all that for you. You don't need to carry all these extra supplies. Remember, we talked about that a few days back, about how there's no way, not only supplies, but lead shields and that. There's no way with the weight of all that stuff that that could have ever been done up until this point. So if you instead put that crew of six into torpor, you could shrink the habitation module to just 40 cubic meters instead of 380. Oh my God, talk about claustrophobia. By throwing out the kitchen, throwing out the exercise room, throwing out anything entertainment related, including your eating supplies and more, and you could then trim back that grocery list to just 4,000 kilograms of food. Hey, is this what they're going to do with like the last remaining million or so? What was that number that they said we had to get the world population down to? Is that what they're going to do with the last million or so of us? Put us all into stasis here on Earth to save us for when they need us? Don't worry about it. The robots will take all the jobs. They won't even need us to, like, do anything. And put us into stasis, and then they can wake us up when they need us. Pretty frightening research they're doing here. It could be applied in a lot of different ways. So this reduction in human-related mass leads to a reduction in several areas, including power requirements and the overall structure that is required. The result is that the spacecraft can do without 140,000 kilograms of engines and fuel. Now, that's pretty huge. And this is just over the maximum lifting capacity of the heaviest version of NASA's space launch system, which will probably cost something like $5 billion per launch, not including the hardware it would be carrying. So getting humans into torpor and keeping them there safely might not be as science fiction-y as it sounds. Humans may not naturally hibernate, but we can fake it for a few days without much trouble. Therapeutic hypothermia. There you go. Ding, ding. That's what I was talking about. Putting them into ice water and lowering the metabolism is a relatively common medical treatment. At least now it is, but it didn't used to be. Where hospitals put patients into a sedated hypothermia after a traumatic injury, giving the body a couple of days of healing in a low metabolic state. This is done by cooling the body down using one of a number of methods, including non-invasive ones, by just 5 degrees Celsius, and this reduces the body's metabolic rate by between 50 to 70%, with no drugs being necessary, just temperature reduction. And unlike naturally hibernating animals like bears, astronauts are not expected to live off their body fat for 8 months. Liquid nutrients. Yes, we have some of those coming for space too. Liquid nutrients can be fed directly into the bloodstreams, bypassing the digestive system completely. And how interesting is that as well? Because if they can feed liquid nutrients directly into the bloodstream, what did we find out was one of the two best barriers against poisons and, nanomaterials under 20 millimeters getting into the body or nanometers getting into the body was the small intestine. So if they just bypass all that, go direct to the bloodstream, they could put anything they wanted into your bloodstream. This technique of liquid nutrients being fed directly into your bloodstream is called total parenteral parenteral nutrition, or TPN for short. It is common for people with gastrointestinal disorders to rely on TPN completely for months or years at a time. And I think also, isn't that how they do feeding tubes? Or maybe that's down into the stomach, but it has already been done. We've seen that. That's not rocket science. But a human in torpor would only need about 300 grams of liquid nutrients per day. Whereas an astronaut on the International Space Station consumes about 2,000 grams of food per day. And what's more, you wouldn't even have to worry about your solid waste, because then they could have you attached to a catheter. Oh, God. And that would take care of everything. And here's a picture, a lovely picture. I don't know. Copy image. Let me see if I can go to chat really quick. We'll drop this in here. A lovely picture of your future flying in a torpor. It makes me think of the word stupor, bumping into walls to Mars. So why are we doing this already? Well, mostly because we haven't tried it. There is no medical reason for people to be kept in low metabolic states through therapeutic hypothermia for more than about 5 days. So there isn't a lot of data to show how to manage longer-term hibernation. I'm going to tell you, Pigmine had a video, had to already be like 2, maybe even 3 years ago on RT, that it talked all about the research that was going into stasis. The video I have queued up here, let's see. Oh, yeah, it's from 2014. I found it. All right, we'll get there in a minute. Anyway, so SpaceWorks says that they are starting to see limited experimental data for hibernation for up to 14 days. 2 weeks is a critical time span. Being able to keep humans in stasis for at least that long makes NASA's vision start to become viable. Astronauts could be rotated through repeated cycles of activity and then hibernation, keeping their consumption, waste, and boredom to a minimum. Isn't that how that worked on the aliens spaceship, the mining ship? I think they came in and out of stasis, and the ship itself, that probably had some sort of AI in it, had control, and every once in a while, if it detected a problem, it would thaw out the captain so we could get up to check out what was going on. Oh, this is just so disturbing to me. They are taking control of all functions of life, not just the building blocks of life, but then being able to control the functions of life and whether or not we can turn you on or off. SpaceWorks is targeting torpor for the entire trip to Mars, though. And they've got some problems to solve. There are known complications for long-duration intravenous feeding, for example. And yeah, trust me, from someone who had issues with autoimmune and discovered it was the food and then started doing like protein powders and liquid stuff to try to like fix myself and get off all the bad chemicals. And then I discovered after probably going, I don't know, 2-3 weeks without doing solid food, that there's a big problem when you try to go back. Your digestive system does not take kindly to not doing solid foods for extended periods of time. It also takes time to safely wake people up, which would be a problem if there's an emergency in the spacecraft or a medical issue. Or maybe you just have robots on hand to manage everything. Ding. And long term, the argument for torpor becomes even more compelling as you start thinking about what it would take to colonize Mars with hundreds of people at a time. And according to Elon Musk, he wants to save humanity by taking a million. SpaceWorks has been toying with the idea of a transfer vehicle capable of hauling 100 passengers at once, using 2 48-person torpor modules along with a 4-person active crew. Interesting, because that's what Elon Musk was talking about, too, 100-person spaceships. Nobody is quite sure exactly what spending months and months in torpor might actually do to a human, mentally or physically. SpaceWorks is now in phase two of the NASA-funded research study on the subject. That's interesting because, like I said, Gabby Giffords, her husband, is an astronaut, and Gabby was one of those very first people that they were testing that cooling down to save the brain. The company will be focusing on medical assessments and evaluations, exploring different approaches for metabolic suppression and nutritional support. And another big unknown that they will seek to explore is what prolonged hypothermia does to non-hibernating animals. Well, good point. You know, they lower your core temperature. That core temperature, which causes your teeth to chatter if it gets too low. I couldn't imagine that hypothermia for extended periods of time to some of your most vital organs would be such a good thing. Prolonged microgravity might also be an issue, but SpaceWorks is exploring ways of spinning their stasis habitat to generate an artificial gravity. And of course, we found out CERN is working on the artificial magnetosphere as well, a move that conscious astronauts would not be able to handle because they might be able to feel it spinning, I don't know, as well as using direct electrical stimulation. So we get those little zippity zappers, those TENS units, to help keep muscle mass from decreasing. And we saw that DARPA was doing all kinds of research on that ElectRx and sending frequencies and electrical signals through different parts of the body to see what it would do and cure everything. SpaceWorks is also thinking much farther ahead to what would come next after Mars, the ability to put humans into torpor indefinitely, ding, would potentially open up the asteroid belt and both Jupiter and Saturn to human exploration. And putting people into torpor indefinitely is what I am concerned about. Again, as they start cracking the secrets of all of biology and taking command of things that were considered I was going to say magical. It's not even magical. I mean, it's just part of nature. And they are able to harness all of these things that exist within nature and our bodily systems and take control and flip switches on and off and create and puppeteer in their own image to their own wants and needs. There is an ultimate, ultimate danger. I would never, ever want to give anyone that level of control over my person. All right, let's see now. This is only a few minute video. Let's see if we can connect without crashing. Yeah, it looks like we did. All right, doctors. Let me check the volume. It's right up. Doctors try suspended animation on people, and this is from March 28th, 2014. This is already from 2.5 years ago. All right, here we go.
Well, this headline became a hot topic in our newsroom today. Check it out. Humans will be kept between life and death in the first suspended animation trials. Suspended animation. At a hospital in Pittsburgh, surgeons are trying this as a last resort on patients who would otherwise be dead.
APR buys time because the body can't tolerate not having blood flow for more than just a few minutes. By cooling them, we can buy time by slowing down the processes that occur when there's no blood flow to the vital organs like the heart and brain. This will allow the surgeons to repair injuries and save the patients.
They use cold saline to do that. Very strange. For more on this, we just had to call the doctor in. I was joined earlier by Dr. Sujatha Reddy from Atlanta for more details. I first asked her how this procedure is different from like an induced coma, which is one we've heard so much about regarding Formula One driver Michael Schumacher. Let's listen.
So when a patient has a brain injury, putting them into a coma is often done to give the brain kind of a downtime so it can heal. And what we're talking here with this preservation with the saline is really kind of the same thing, but slightly different, obviously. What we're doing here is trying to prevent further injury by sort of chilling the body at a lower temperature. And here we're using actually about 50 degrees Fahrenheit. And by doing that, you're giving the doctors a chance to repair a major injury. So when we put an induced coma on a patient, we're helping the brain heal. Here we're trying to buy some time to repair, let's say, a gunshot wound. So it's a similar principle, but this newer process with the saline fluid hasn't been really done before.
It's very...
Except on Gabby Giffords.
Exciting to read about. What types of injuries exactly is this procedure being used with?
So what they're hoping to use it on are major traumas, like either major internal hemorrhaging from, let's say, a car accident or a gunshot wound, something where the patient comes in and is essentially lost most of their blood volume or is actively bleeding and is in cardiac arrest. So it's going to be really people that are on death's doorstep, if you will.
Okay, so this was first tried on pigs back in 2002, and it was an apparent success, obviously. It's a big leap trying this on humans. There was a lot of consent that had to be given to the communities where this hospital is located in to let people know that they would be doing this if anyone came in with a traumatic injury. From what I understand, this will only be used on patients that are considered clinically dead. How do they legally test this out on humans to make sure that it's allowed?
So all institutions have something called the IRB. It's the Institutional Review Board, and any research has to go through that. And in that panel are multiple experts, ethicists. And I do believe that this has to be approved by them, and I think even other governing bodies like the FDA had to approve this trial. But I think when you're talking about patients who have no other hope, you could see ethically how it could be done, because these are...
Dang. Hold on. You know, she mentioned a couple things. I see the subtitle on this video is humans will be kept between life and death in first medical trials. A few things I noticed. One is that this is taking place in Pittsburgh. And if you remember that Pennsylvania University is in the middle of a lot of these mad science technologies. The president of that university was some sort of advisor, science advisor to Obama at the White House. We have the University Pennsylvania is also going to be one of the first ones to CRISPR some humans here in the United States. They're pushing for December. She also talked about that approval board that has to approve on a case-by-case basis experimentation on humans and potentially even approval by the FDA. And we saw that that is going on for CRISPRing humans to try and cure cancer, Penn, for this December experiment that they are trying to kick off. And it's even more interesting, did you hear what she said? That this typically is going to be utilized on people who have no other choice. They come in and they are, quote, clinically dead, preying on the dead and dying and the desperate to try some of these insane new technologies. Now, hey, they've seen lots of successes with this, and I'm not going to put it down because, like I said, you know, use some high profile cases and then go, oh, look how miraculous. Everybody jump on board. But on the other hand, you heard what we were just reading about where this research may lead. And this could potentially lead to them figuring out how to literally turn humans off indefinitely. That wouldn't be a good thing at all. All right, let's hear the rest of this.
Patients that are, like you said, are basically already declared dead, and you're trying this last-ditch effort hoping to make an impact here.
So how are doctors measuring the success of this procedure beyond just bringing someone back? So what sort of tests would need to be done to have this become a more widespread practice? Because as with the pigs they did the experiments on, they said that the cognitive abilities returned. How would they test this out to make sure that the humans coming back are okay?
Right, because obviously in a pig cognitive function, it's, you know, not as necessary as with a human, right? Pig's cognitive function is going to be a little bit different. We hope we have higher brain power than that. You know, what they're going to look for is obviously memory issues, brain issues. Really, ultimately, is a person going to wake up and function normal? Still put the person that's undergone this resuscitative process under a lot of neurological testing, but it'll be basically how their brain is functioning. You know, is their memory normal? Are they able to do simple tasks and just be a normal person? Or are we bringing these people back and could they have major, you know, deficits like brain damage or have traumatic brain injury and then maybe this is not the way to go, or we need to reestablish how we do this to hopefully achieve full cognitive function, because if you're going to save someone's life, ultimately you'd want them to be at their full functioning. But they'll be putting them through obviously numerous tests regarding brain function, memory, and tasks and things like that.
You know, another thing. Remember, as a part of all this mad science DARPA research that's going on, that's being sprinkled out to all these universities, not only do we have genomics and all this CRISPRing technology going on to cure all these diseases and building little programmable bacteria that can go inside of you and tamp down on inflammation to have your bloodstream doctor in space, but we also have all these brain initiatives. One big brain initiative, lots of little brain projects that are happening everywhere as well. Not only to learn to push buttons and create different chemicals to be produced in the brain based on a set of zips or zaps, potentially, or the type of gut bacteria that you have that's going to cause your dopamine or oxytocin or whatever, but we also have brain implants. And you know what, Dan? It left the story open upstairs, but there's some new single DNA strand electronic that makes a single electron that they are going to be able to use in electronics now. I mean, things are just insane. We saw the little DNA brain implants that they had come up with back a few months ago. Guys, they'll be able to fix anything. You got brain damage. Don't worry about it. We'll reprogram you. Bzz, bzz, bzz. A few little zippity zaps here. We can get rid of memories with a flash of light. Remember that one too? More DARPA research. Or we can push a button and see your thoughts and replace them with new, better thoughts. We'll just give you a trip to Disney World. Feed it into your brain for the time that you are in stasis. And when you get there, you'll feel all happy and won't have any deficits. You know, we'll just make sure that we program you with what we want you to remember. It's a frightening, frightening, frightening long-term future for the human race.
When it comes to putting someone in a suspended state, so as you mentioned, they can fix this, the structures that have been compromised, such as if it's a gunshot wound, et cetera, how long can a person be kept in this suspended state?
Well, obviously, you're going to want to keep them in that state for as short a time as possible, because even though the body can sort of still function at that lower temperature, obviously not more than, I would imagine, and again, this is part of the research, probably not more than an hour or two at the most. And obviously, the shorter time they're under this process, the better. But, you know, most people have heard about like a young child or an adult that's fallen into like a lake and into the freezing cold water, and somehow they're able to be alive in that water because their body temperature has gone down. What happens when the body temperature lowers is your cells function at a slower level, and you can actually survive longer that way without oxygen. So they're sort of mimicking that process, hoping to put the body sort of to sleep while they do these major surgical repairs. So again, the shorter the time, the better, but I'd imagine it's going to be anywhere from an hour to two, not much more than that.
Well, it's very exciting to see how these clinical trials are carried out and see what the results will be. Dr. Sujatha Reddy from Atlanta, thank you very much.
And let me turn this off. See, now this was 2 years ago, and already the article that we were reading here, that was from last week, a few weeks ago, September 15th, a month ago, it talked about them already being able to do it for quite an extended period of time. They want to, of course, make it longer and longer. So, suspended animation is a way that they are suggesting, if you go to Mars, one of the first off-world trips to a new heavenly body, except for pretending that we went to the moon, would be a way. But how are we going to do it? Well, and I don't know, do we want to even? I mean, the show is about the end. We're not even going to look at warp drives. Here, how are we going to eat, right? We're going to need food. You need some Soylent synthetic food on your plate with your ultimate nutrition. All right, guys, make sure you have an awesome weekend. I will catch up with you on Monday. Everybody, take care.
Hey, this is JJ Inc., and when I'm on planet Earth, I listen to UCY.com.